Being friends, with Leo's permission, I thought it would be most fitting if we learned in memory of your father, memory of Samuel Gans, whose neshama should have an aliyah. Tonight, my aspiration is to learn together the third perek of the Book of Ruth, the critical turning point perek in terms of putting Ruth and Boaz on a collision course towards one another. But as you see, I've, in bold here, titled the Shir Chayil, because the actual meaning of the term Chayil, which of course a Chayal is a soldier, the Chayil is associated with a kind of military strength, but what we'll see is that the term Chayil or valor has many levels of meaning to it, but really takes on its deepest meaning in the context of this particular story. So many of the allusions that we'll see throughout this particular chapter to other spaces in the Tanakh will surround the usage of this term. And I thought it'd be an appropriate point of departure to frame our learning together tonight. So the way that it's going to work is the text of the third chapter you have here in the right-hand column, and then in the left-hand column I simply pasted in various psukim, either from elsewhere in Megillat Rut or elsewhere in general, that have to be kept in mind as one reads and learns through the third perek. So the third perek begins, and let's just review for ourselves for just a moment. The end of the second chapter featured Ruth coming back with a very inordinate bounty that caught the attention of Naomi, and Naomi wanted to know, where did she collect? Ve'ana asit, where did you make such a bounty? Yihima ki reich baruch, the one who recognized you should be blessed, says Naomi. And Ruth very innocently says, this man's name is Boaz, right? You know, she has no idea about it. And we discussed it extensively. You know, Ruth must have had a very strange reaction when Naomi turns around and says, yes, well, of course, he's our very wealthy relative. And she would be sitting there thinking, well, okay, but why didn't you send me there to begin with? Why did you wait for this to happen sort of its own accord? So that's exactly where we left things off. So finally, Naomi, who we described in a state of very deep depression, which we're not judging, we're just making the observation. So the pasuk says, "Vatomer la Naomi chamuta biti." She now, of course, calls her my daughter, and that's been consistent for the first chapter. Halo avakeshlach manoach asher yitavlach. Do I not desire for you manoach, respite, resting that will be good for you? So we saw this very same word, the same shoresh of manoach, which of course comes from the term minucha in the first chapter. But does anybody happen to remember what was the connotation there? She's not telling Ruth that she wants her to be able to get a great mattress so she'll be able to sleep the best sleep she's had her whole life. You know, you hear the mattress advertisements on the radio. What's she saying? Halo avakeshlach. Siggy's laughing because, you know, it's on his mind. Halo avakeshlach manoach asher yitavlach. Herb, what was that a reference to? That she should come to a place of tranquility. That's an allusion to was that Dr. Horowitz? Anybody remember? A home, meaning marriage, yeah. So if you go back to the first chapter, that's exactly right, Justin. So this is exactly the very word that Naomi used, Yitein Hashem Lachem, God should be good and generous with you, Umitzena Minucha, each of you. Remember, she's speaking at this point to Ruth and Orpah, her two daughters-in-law, Isha, Beit Isha. You should all find serenity and tranquility in the house of your respective future husbands. Vatishak lehen, she kisses them. Vatisena kolan vatifkena, and of course they all cry. So Naomi now is sort of returning back to this original scene that she had way back when she told Ruth and Orpah in the plains of Moab before they returned to Judea months ago that she wanted them to remarry. But of course, this subject hasn't come up for conversation in more recent conversations between Ruth and Naomi, because they both had become convinced that Ruth's marriage prospects within Jewish society were really nil. But once, of course, Naomi begins to appreciate that Boaz is accepting of Ruth, and remember, Ruth herself was astonished by this, to quote from the parak that we saw last week, Madua matzasi chein be'inecha lahakireni, how have I found favor in your eyes that you're treating me so well, v'anochi nochriya, and I'm just a foreigner. In other words, Ruth had already internalized the message that she was a minority, she was a stranger, she's inferior. So now all of a sudden, it's coming together for Naomi, at least, that there's a possibility here that she never even considered. V'ata, and now, continuing on in the Psukim, in the right-hand column from the third chapter, hello, Boaz modatanu. Boaz is somebody who knows us, he's a relative. Asher ha'itet narotav, hinehu zoret, goren ha'seorim halayla. He is going to be literally winnowing. Zora is a malacha, it's an act of creative labor which is done in the context of using the wind to separate between the wheat and the chaff. So Boaz is going to be doing that at night. Presumably he's going to be doing that at night because what picks up a little bit at night? The wind, right? So good to do that at night. V'rachatz t'v'sach, so you should prepare yourself, get all dressed up. V'samt simlotayach alayach v'yarat ha'goren alti vadila ish ad kaloto lechov lishto. You should go on a clandestine mission, and Naomi sends Ruth on a very daring mission, and you should go and basically proposition Boaz to make sure that you're no longer in a position where you have to struggle every single day and collect food, but you should go up to Boaz and of course bring matters to a head for purposes of minucha, for purposes of marriage. V'hi v'shachvo v'yadat et ha'makom asher yishkav sham. You should scout out and look very carefully to see where he's going to sleep that night. Uvad v'galit marglota v'shachaf v'hu yagid lach et asher tasin. And in terms of how exactly this is going to transpire, you know, you can imagine Ruth thinking to herself, you know, what exactly are you asking me to do? She says, don't worry about it. You should have confidence in him. V'hu yagid lach, he's going to tell you exactly what you should do. Don't worry about how exactly you should proceed once you get there. So, you know, the average person, I think, if given this plan, would react how? What would be, like, a normal reaction? Right. It's, like, not within the social mores of the time, right? But, you know, it's not only that. It's she's saying go, and, you know, in terms of, what's that? Yeah, and she says, and don't worry about it. V'hu yagid lach et asher tasin. He's going to, you know, take care of it. And, you know, look, obviously both Ruth and Naomi have a favorable impression of Boaz, but this is, I think we could all agree, like a qualitatively different level of trust that everything's going to work out okay. Especially, right, let's just give a little bit of the background that we touched on. Ruth was constantly being disparaged for being a Moaviyah, right? And what was our association with Benot Moab? What did we comment on? That Benot Moab were stigmatized in Jewish society. Why? Well, more directly, what was the incident in the Torah that Benot Moab were involved in? Exactly right. So remember after the story of Bilam and Balak, right? So Bilam gives Balak the advice that the Benot Moab should go and seduce the Jewish people, right? And there's a terrible plague, the worst plague that we have recorded in the entire Chumash. 24,000 Jews die because of the seductions of the Benot Moab, right? And Ruth has, you know, basically everybody besides Boaz is stigmatizing her as Moabiyah, right? That's a dirty word that has a certain connotation that we're not going to repeat in the context of a sanctuary, let alone, you know, in any decent company. But now what is she being told to do? Go and seduce the Jewish male, right? In other words, confirm everybody's presumptions about, you know, the kind of woman that you are, right? And all of your behavior up until now has demonstrated that that's not the case, but this must have been a doubly uncomfortable thing for Ruth to consider even, to contemplate doing, you know, given the fact that she was already stigmatized. And yet, here's the greatness of Ruth, and we've come to appreciate this about it, Vatomer Eleha. So Ruth says to her, Kol Asher Tomri Elai Esa. What's her reaction? Whatever you tell me, I will do. You know, there's so much here. Because Ruth doesn't say, okay, yes. She doesn't say Cain. Right? What does she say? I'll do it basically because you're telling me to do it. If you're reading carefully, if you're reading between the lines, what can you detect here? There's text. Right? She understands that there's something radical about this. Something completely outside the bounds of what one would normally do. But kol asher tomri elai aseh. What does this harken back to? Of course, this goes back to the first chapter. Vasher tolchi eleich, vasher tamuti amut, v'sham ekaver, ameich ami, v'lokai echolokai. What's good for you is good for me. Naomi, if this is what you tell me to do. And the remarkable thing is, okay, at that time in Perek Aleph, so it was her mother-in-law, she respected her, she loved her, she felt sorry for her. But in the intervening time, Ruth has been the one that's sustaining the family. Ruth is the one that's taking care of everything. And you can imagine that dynamic in the relationship shifting, where Ruth no longer has to respect Naomi, where she doesn't have to listen to her. She's been keeping them alive. And yet, Ruth, in her consistency, I would say in her purity, kol asher tomri elai aseh, whatever you tell me, I'm going to do. A certain basic loyalty to her character that is highly impressive. So, vatered agoren, vatas kechol asher tivata chamota. She goes and she does everything that her mother-in-law commanded her to do. Now, continuing on, the scene shifts, of course, to the threshing floor. Vayochal Boaz, that night Boaz ate after he was done winnowing. Vayesh vayitav libo. Vayavol lishkav biktzeh harimah. Vatavo balad vatagal margalotav vatishkav. So Boaz, after of course doing his work in the threshing floor, doing the winnowing, so he's eaten and he's had what to drink, and he goes to sleep sort of at the edge, right by where the wheat pile was. And Ruth, in a clandestine and quiet way, without anybody else noticing her, is able to sneak up right next to him, and she lies down. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla. And it was, what do we know about the chatzi halayla in Tanakh? What's that? Right, it's always the moment of redemption. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, v'ashem yikakol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim, b'chor paro yushev al kiso. Right, b'chatzi halayla becomes such an important motif of the Haggadah. Exactly, v'yehi b'chatzi halayla. So we know v'yehi b'chatzi halayla. The Navi is cueing us to a note of redemption. Okay, so we know that v'yehi b'chatzi halayla is always a redemptive motif. So it's like cueing the music. V'yehi b'chatzi halayla. V'yecharad ha'ish v'yilafed. He starts trembling. He says, "Oh my God." There's a woman that, is not his wife, lying down right next to him. So this is,
some guys have older.
What's that? Vayomer, so he says, Mihat, who in the world are you? Vatomer, and she says, Anochi Ruta Matacha, I am Rut, your ama. Okay, we're going to come back to that expression. Your female servant, ufarasta chnafecha lamatecha ki goel ata. But you should make me more than that. Make me more than just an ama. You should literally extend your cloak in protection over me, because you are, of course, a redeemer. Rashi explains that language, ufarasta chnafecha, that you should take your cloak and cover me. Knaf bigdecha lichsuti, for purposes of covering me. Betalitcha, in your cloak, v'hu lashon nisuin. Some people, actually, in the German community, right, they actually have this minhag that when they stand under the chuppah, what do? They go under the same talis together. It all actually goes back to this pasuk in Megillat Ruth. So, in any event, this idea that Ruth portrays herself as the ama, as the maidservant of Boaz, who's looking to become more, right, we focused exactly on those psukim last week. So just to go back, now, in the left-hand column, this is when Ruth was first asking Boaz, why are you being so nice to me? Why do you care about me? Why aren't you You know, why are you intervening when people are harassing me? So Vayan Boaz Vayomer La. So Boaz explained to her exactly what was going on, and he says, "Who gave God the kol asher asid el chamotecha chare moti sheikh v'atazvi avich v'imeich v'eretz moladetech." Remember, that's where we said this sounds like he's comparing her to Abraham Avinu. Lecha chamiyart chamilad chamibet avicha v'atochi al am asher lo yadat moshul shom. Yeshalem Adonai Palulech Chutimas Kertesh Fleimam Ima Adonai Elohei Yisrael Asher Bat Lachasot Tachat Knafav. So what were Boaz's words to Ruth? That he recognizes that you, Ruth, have come literally under Asher Bat Lachasot Tachat Kanfei Ashkina, that you've come under God's wing. So what's Ruth doing here? You can see her intelligence. He says, yes, it's all well and good that I've come to shelter under God's wings, but in this world we also need human redeemers as well. So when she says, "Ufarasta kinafecha ala matecha kigoelata," right? What's she really saying to him? She's saying, "Yes, it's true. Asher bati lachaso tachat kanfei hashchina. I've come to convert. I've come to be a member of the Jewish people." But that same usage of the term kanaf, of the use of the term wing, she says, well, you're going to need to help me out here. She's remembering the exact words that he said to her, and she's, so to speak, playing them back for him. So let's see what Boaz's reaction is. I think we can safely say this is probably the first time in Boaz's life that he's being propositioned in this way. You know, he's, I'm sure, been winnowing, you know, his entire life at this point, and, you know, probably experienced many such harvests, but first time that a marriage proposition is coming along with it. So let's see what Boaz's spontaneous reaction is going to be. Vayomer, and so he says, Brucha at la Hashem biti. May you be blessed unto God, my daughter. Heitav chasdecha charon min arishon. The chesed that you're showing now supersedes the chesed that you did before, some kind of previous chesed. Levilti lechad acharei bachurim imdal v'imashir. Because of course, this is classic Boaz, you know, you could have married anyone. We know how many choices you had. Levilti lechad acharei bachurim, you could have married off, you know, one of me, you know, I'm already old, I'm not such a young man, and yet, you know, you're choosing me. I'm so humbled and flattered by all of this. And we know that you had so many choices. Surely you'd rather be with somebody younger, somebody closer to your age. Whether he was rich or poor, he'd have so much more to offer you than I do. Now, what do you think about what Boaz is saying? Does Ruth have so many options?
No.
There's nobody else who even talked to her. Right, she's been completely stigmatized in society. But what's Boaz doing here?
It's making her feel more confident about herself. It's not, I don't want to marry you because you're no good. It's, I'm not good enough for you, you're so good.
Exactly. So here we have, I think, the essence of what Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, what Jewish ethic of interpersonal relationships is all about. The key always is to put yourself precisely where the other person is. Very hard to do, because you could never really be in somebody else's shoes. But to try to think about what the other person must be experiencing right now. So imagine a woman who's being sent to do what Ruth has been sent to do. And the word that comes to mind is utter desperation. For a woman in society to behave in such a way, she must be, literally, this must be her only option. And so, being in a desperate situation often comes along with feelings of humiliation, feelings of shame, feelings of inadequacy. So think about that, and then think about what Boaz is saying to her. It may seem to us almost patently absurd, because we know that it doesn't seem to comport with the reality all around. And surely by next week, when Boaz is actually going to say, you know, we have to offer somebody else the opportunity to marry you first, and as soon as the guy hears about it, what does he say?
No,
runs in the other direction. I mean, we know it not to be true, right? But what is Boaz really doing here? He's saying, I'll
you're choosing me, you, with all of the options. There is this focusing precisely on that nikuda, exactly on that point, that she must feel so desperate and humiliated, and he's taking exactly that point and saying, oh, you, with so many options, choosing me, I'm the beneficiary of your chesed. Heitatz chasdecha charon min arishon, neviltilechara chareya bachri min dal v'yimashir. Do you see this profound psychological insight and human sensitivity on Boaz's part? That he's able to really understand the emotional dynamic from Ruth's point of view, and able to address it in a way that speaks to humanity, to giving her her dignity back. And this is something absolutely remarkable. All the chesed that you're doing with me, I can't tell you how good you're making me feel. You, of course, could have had anyone. The fact that you're choosing me is really makes me feel special. Don't worry, I will never abandon you. I'll do exactly what it is that you're suggesting, in other words, without referencing it, there will be marriage. We're going to take care of everything. Because the entire sha'ar, and the sha'ar is a place of judgment, it's the sort of the halachic center of society, everybody knows that you're really an eshet chayil, that you are a woman of valor. So this is actually the only reference we have in the entire Tanakh to a specific woman being called Eshet Chayil. It's very important because when Shlomo writes in Sefer Mishlei, we'll take a look at it and we'll see many of the references to Ruth throughout Eshet Chayil. It's a good case to be made. There's different theories in the Mephoreshim, but my preferred theory is that when Shlomo wrote Eshet Chayil, remember Shlomo was obviously David's son. David is the great-grandson of Ruth, so he's really writing about his ancestor, Ruth. She's the one that's described as Eshet Chayil. But again, this is a profound sensitivity on the part of Boaz, because what he recognizes is, surely, that he's the only one that treats Ruth with any amount of dignity and respect. Everybody else treats her as a Moabiyah, with everything that being a Moabiyah entails, right? And imagine having to do this, as we spoke about, how that would make her feel in terms of her own degree of morality or her own behavior. And what does Boaz say? Ki yodeya kol shar amin. Don't think it's just me that, you know, respects you, but everybody respects you. Ki yodeya kol shar amin, ki eshet chayilat, that you're a woman of virtue, that you're a woman of valor, that you're somebody of a high degree of morals. So again, understanding and appreciating exactly her vulnerability, understanding and appreciating just how this must make her feel, to be doing something like this and the kind of self-doubt that it would generate. And he says, it's not just me who looks at you this way, ki yodea kol shar ami ki eshet chayil at, that you, of course, are a woman of valor, a courageous woman, a woman of moral substance. And if you take a look over at the left-hand column, of course, it was that exact word with which Boaz was introduced. The Naomi modal isha, ish gibor chayil, that Boaz, the first adjective which is used to describe him is gibor chayil, a person of strength and courage. So what the Navi, what Shmuel HaNavi is doing in authoring Megillat Rut is trying to demonstrate how chayil is finding chayil, how, you know, it sort of attracts each other. Ki yodea kol shar ami ki eshet chayilat, the ish gibor chayil and the eshet chayil will inevitably find each other, even if it is under the most, admittedly, unlikely of circumstances. And here we see an aspect of Boaz that, just in the interest of time, we're not going to, you know, read all the psukim inside, but Boaz's sense of discipline and Boaz's self-control. Part of being a gibor chayil, a great warrior, we spoke about this in Pirkei Avos last week, ezehu gibor, the Mishnah says, hakovesh. Right, so there must have been a certain degree of temptation for Boaz at this point. But he said, you know, there's a halachic process that we have to follow, because while it's true that I'm a relative and I'm in a position, as the Ramban explains in Sefer Breishit, Yibum isn't only for the brother, but when you have a death in the family without any children, as was the case with Ruth and Machlon, right, somebody from the family is supposed to step up, but it should go according to the closeness of the relation. So Boaz is related,
But he recognized, Omnam Yesh Goel Karov Mimeni. There's somebody who's actually closer in line than I am to be the Redeemer. And that means that I can't, so to speak, jump the line. I have to do things with a degree of halachic integrity and work within the system. And this itself is, of course, to his great credit. Boaz is able to send Ruth back in such a way. The Navi points out that nobody knows that she was there, again, to protect her reputation. Eventually, Ruth comes home to Naomi. You can't say that night, but early in the morning, very early in the wee morning hours, and Naomi questions her and says, you know, basically what happened. And Naomi reports back that indeed, you know, they had the conversation. And if you just take a look here, this is Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Chet. So Naomi tells Ruth that she has full confidence that Boaz wasn't just telling her, you know, okay, pushing her off, that nothing's going to happen, but on the contrary, Vatomer Shviviti Ad Asher Tedin Echipol Davar Lo Yishkot Ha'ish Ki Im Kila Hadavar Hayom Lo Yishkot Ha'ish. That this Ish, this man, will not rest. He will not simply allow this matter to drag on. Ki Im Kila Davar Hayom. He's going to handle things today. And this is also part of what it means for Boaz to be an Ish Gibor Chayil. He's going to get matters taken care of, and it's not going to be a delay, it's not going to be a week, and then 2 weeks, and then a month, and then a year, and then it never happens. On the contrary, lo yishkot ha'ish, he will not rest, ki im kila hadavar hayom, Boaz is going to make sure that either you're married to a closer relative, who of course we're going to meet next week, or that of course Boaz is going to step up to the plate himself. So just in conclusion, as I alluded to, this idea of the Eshet Chayil, the very conclusion of Sefer Mishlei, which of course authored by Shlomo, who was a great-great-grandson of Ruth, you can see in this very familiar Perek of Tanakh so many allusions to the most familiar and critical incidents that we've read about over the last number of weeks, and that we'll conclude with next week as we read the fourth and final chapter of Megillat Ruth. But I'll just single out a number of psukim from the Eshet Chayil, where you can see that Shlomo was referring to the specific story of his great-great-grandmother and the virtues that she demonstrated. Eshet Chayil miyimtza v'rachok mipininim michra. Who could find in Eshet Chayil, her value is of course worth more than jewels. I'm sure many people here have the custom of singing this on Friday night. So, of course, in context, what it means, Eshet Chayil miyimtza, that it's a very difficult thing to find. But, of course, there's a double entendre here. If you understand that this is really talking about Ruth, Eshet Chayil miyimtza, who could find an Eshet Chayil? What was Shlomo alluding to? You can almost see with a slight smile on his face him penning these words, right? Eshet Chayil miyimtza, you don't find her, she finds you, right? Okay, so it's actually the opposite way around. The Eshet Chayil found the Ish Gibor Chayil in the Goren during the Azriyat Seorim. Batach Bali Bala Vishal Lo Yachsar, etc. Skipping ahead to Pasuk Yedalad, Haitakeni Yatzocher Mimerchak Tavi Lachma, that she, of course, is a great provider. She's able to bring bread to the household. What was Ruth doing this entire time during the harvest season every day? She was showing up with the Seorim, with the Chitim. She was showing up with the basis from which her and Naomi were going to live. Vatakom ve'od laila. She got up in the middle of the night. Okay? We just read about that. Vayhi v'chatzi ha'laila. Skipping ahead to Yitzayin. Chagra ve'oz matneha. She acted with great boldness. I think that's a fair description of Ruth. Vata'ameitz roteha. And she acted with imutz halev. Remember, that goes back to Perek Aleph, our allusion. What did Naomi see? Vatera ki mitametzet hi lalechet ita v'tachdal daberi leha. That we differentiated between koach, physical strength, and ometz, inner strength. So again, Shlomo is describing Miss Eshet Chayil, of course, his great-great-grandmother, as a woman of amitzut lev, a woman of courage and bravery. Bravery. Skipping ahead to Pasuk Chaf Gimel, this is bolded. No daba sha'arim bala, that her husband was known as in the sha'arim. b'shivto im ziknei aretz. That's literally like a verbatim, almost a verbatim rendering of what we're going to find in Perek Dalet, that Boaz ala hashara, right? That's the beginning of Perek Dalet. He goes to the shar, he calls over the zakenim, and they have this whole yibum moment. So nodav hashar im bala b'shivto im ziknei aretz, clearly a reference to Boaz. Pasuk chafav pia patcha b'chachma v'torat chesed al lashona. She's a woman who speaks with great wisdom. We spoke a little bit about that today, how she's able to use Boaz's words when he says that she came lachasot tachat kanfei ashchina. She says uferasa kanfecha matecha, but not only pia patcha b'chachma, but v'torat chesed al lashona. That she's a paragon of chesed, which is exactly the way that Boaz described her. Heitav chastecha charon min harishon. She's a woman who's constantly involved in chesed. And then finally, pasuk lamed aleph, tnu lami priyadeha. Ultimately, she will reap the fruits of her own labor. V'halalua v'sha'arim maseha. And she will be praised in the sha'arim. And of course, that's what Boaz said to her in the chapter that we read tonight, when Boaz said, ki yodeya kol sha'ar ami. Everybody knows, ki eshet chayil at, that you are the eshet chayil, that you are the woman of great courage, of great valor, of great virtue, of great morals. Even though the situation superficially looks anything like that, anything but that, the truth of the matter is that anybody who can see with a discerning eye can appreciate exactly what it is that you represent and your true character. So God willing, what we'll take a look at next week is the fourth and final chapter of Megillat Rut, where we see, you know, the contrast between Boaz and everybody else in society at that particular juncture in history. We're going to see the difference between the Ish Gibor Chayil and the other people in this society in Beit Lechem. It's going to really be highlighted. Let's not forget where we started this whole discussion. That during the period of the Shoftim, it was by Amima Hemen Melech B'Yisrael Ish Hayashar Beinav Yaseh, that everybody what was doing what was good for them. Nobody was thinking about the other person. And here are Boaz and Ruth, each one demonstrating great sensitivity, great compassion, great humanity, of course, to one another, but also more generally. So the fourth chapter is going to be a referendum on what differentiates Boaz and Ruth, makes them appropriate for each other, the Ish Gibor Chayil, the Eshet Chayil coming together, why they're appropriate for each other, and what differentiates them, of course, from the society at large, Vayihi b'mei Shvat HaShoftim, in this very dark period in Jewish history. They, of course, stand out, and their light illuminates that much further in the context of the moral turpitude and mediocrity of their generation. So that's where we'll pick things up, God willing, 1 week from tonight.